Can you believe it? Election Day 2024 is over.
I'm running on like 2 hours of sleep, so it kind of feels like getting off a merry-go-round, but everything is still spinning. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This week on State Street, even though the votes are in, there's a lot to go over, and a lot still up in the air here in Utah.
Like, what's Salt Lake County government going to look like going forward?
Other things are pretty straightforward. Republicans won statewide and federal elections across the board in Utah. No surprises there. Saw that coming a mile away.
Sean, we all did.
Easy there, Testy.
Okay, Sean, since you saw the future, give us the lowdown on the big ticket races. You went to the Utah Republican Party watch party in Draper. Paint me the scene. Tell me the mood.
You know, things started, in the words of State Representative Anthony Loubet, good-ish at the GOP watch party and only got better as the night went on. Even though Utah results were delayed by about 2 hours because of long lines, there was plenty of good news for Republicans elsewhere in the country for people to cheer for all night.
I can only imagine how high the energy was when former President Donald Trump started chipping away at the electoral map.
Oh yeah, people were fired up, especially when the Associated Press called Pennsylvania for Trump.
But what about Utah? Well, as of Wednesday afternoon as we record, Trump is performing better in Utah this election than he did in 2020 and 2016. But it's not by much, less than 1% right now.
Sage, you looked at those votes for Kamala Harris, though?
Oh, yeah. She did perform slightly better in Utah than Biden did in 2020. So that does show some kind of teensy tiny shift throughout the state. We'll get back to that later. But Sean, Trump wasn't the only Republican to dominate the Utah polls. Am I right?
Per usual, yes. Republican Representative John Curtis is going to be the next senator from Utah. He's going to replace Senator Mitt Romney, continuing that trend of keeping a more moderate Republican in that seat, I might add.
Unity is needed in our nation. You know that. Tonight more than ever. And we should remember that oneness is not sameness, and compromise is not capitulation. I hope that you'll see in my actions the dignity of working together and of unity. As Utah Senator, I will make this motto my mandate in every situation and in every setting.
All four of Utah's congressional seats are red. No changes there.
And no new governor for Utah. The state is sticking with the Spence.
Governor Spencer Cox also won the popular vote. The AP called the race soon after the first batch of results went live. Here he is Wednesday morning.
We're proud of what we were able to accomplish with so much collaboration all across the state. And we can't wait for the next 4 years. We're wildly hopeful and optimistic for our state. And for our nation.
Cox performed worse than he did in 2020, though. That's probably because write-in candidate Phil Lyman was able to siphon off almost 8.5% of the Republican vote in his write-in campaign.
Lyman actually underperformed compared to what the polls were predicting. However, none of that, I guess you could call it a protest vote against Cox, translated to the Democratic candidate. Dems in statewide races didn't move the needle, like, at all.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll hear from a political expert on what the election results mean for Utah.
Hey, I'm David Childs, a producer of State Street. We know there's a lot at stake this election year, and we're here to break it down for you every step of the way. So I want to take a minute to ask for your support. The only way that we at KUER are able to produce projects like State Street is with donations from the local community. People like you who value the content we provide for Utahns across the state. If you can, take a minute and donate to support projects like State Street. Go to KUER.org/support and help us continue bringing you the latest in Utah politics. And thanks.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinkley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. Before we look at the big picture, Sage, tell us about the county races you were covering on Election Day.
I was specifically keeping an eye out on the Salt Lake County Council at-large seat and the county mayoral race.
And both of those races are a big deal because Salt Lake County is the largest county in the state. It's home to 1.2 million people. That's a full third of Utah. And it also allocates a $2 billion budget.
Ding, 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 Higgins. Incumbent Democrat Jenny Wilson beat her Republican challenger Aaron Ryder. Wilson walked away with about 57% of the vote.
Got it. Wilson stays in the mayoral seat for another 4 years. What about this at-large county council seat? We were expecting that one to be pretty close.
Once again, stressing that local elections matter. The race, as of the time this podcast was recorded, is still too close to call. Democrat Natalie Pinckney is currently leading Republican Rochelle Morris by roughly 5 points. That's just shy of 16,000 votes.
Tell the people why this race is important.
Two reasons. One, it is the first time this seat has been open since 2000. Democrat Jim Bradley is retiring from the council after 24 years. It's a competitive grab. Two, the winner of the seat could change the council's makeup. If Republican Rochelle Morris wins, it would be a GOP supermajority, which means they could veto Mayor Wilson at any point, and they don't have to work with the Democrats as much as they have in the past. We also covered Pinckney and Morris's races earlier this season. You know, if you want to hear more.
Dang, Sage. We covered a lot of ground this season, from constitutional amendments to climate change to the importance of local elections in a presidential year. But before we move on to the grand picture of it all, what did this election tell us about all of those things?
Lucky for us, while we were out reporting in the field, our executive producer, Caroline Ballard, snagged a few minutes with University of Utah political science professor Jim Curry. She asked him what this election says about the political winds in Utah.
Things hadn't shifted much in Utah from 2020 to 2024 in the aggregate. You had likely Trump winning by almost the exact same margin that he won in 2020, this time against Kamala Harris. You had him still doing worse than other statewide Republicans, with John Curtis getting somewhere in the mid-60s instead of in the mid to high 50s. That says something, especially in an election where what we're observing nationally is, in a lot of states, a shift towards Trump. This says something about the limitations of the Trump-Republican coalition to win over the types of voters that exist in the state, and maybe in particular LDS voters who are typically Republican and who live in suburban areas may still be somewhat more resistant to a Trump-led Republican Party than to a Republican Party that might be led by a Mitt Romney or a Spencer Cox or a John Curtis.
We've talked about this idea of the possibility of a future purple or purpler, right? A little bit more purple than just solid red Utah. What can this election tell us? Because one of the things is that having those kinds of openings where not everyone is necessarily on board with the party message and there's some fracturing can lead to those openings.
Obviously, we're still a long way from Utah being a swing state. This is sort of a scenario where the Republican nominee is particularly weak and he's still going to win by 20 points. However, the fact that this continues to be a state where way more than 56 to 57% of the voters typically vote Republican. Like, if the Republican Party continues to be molded by a Donald Trump, or even when Donald Trump is gone, by candidates that are similar to Trump, that does start to create an opening and a space where if Democrats can run the right candidates, can persuade the right voters, and maybe even make inroads with some LDS voters, then yes, over the long term, the state could slowly become a little bit more purple, with maybe Democrats routinely pulling above 40%, which all of a sudden now it's a little bit tighter, and maybe you win some more races within the state. But this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow. But it is potentially something that, if the trends continue, could happen in another decade or so.
Let's zoom in on Salt Lake County. Those are some of the results that we've gotten so far. what does that tell us? And the way that that is, that county, the biggest county in Utah, is shifting.
Mm-hmm. The results we have so far show that Salt Lake County is continuing to shift towards the Democratic Party, becoming bluer. Now, in 2020, Joe Biden won Salt Lake County with about 53% of the vote. From the results we have right now, Kamala Harris is set to win the county with maybe 57 or 58% of the vote. And this is obviously with some precincts still yet to report, but that's where she is right now. That's a pretty big shift, especially, again, in an election where Donald Trump is doing better than he did 4 years ago nationally. We're seeing sort of a similar thing with the Salt Lake County mayor's race, with Jenny Wilson poised to win maybe 58 or 59% of the vote. This is Democrats doing better than they have done in Salt Lake County in recent memory. It's a county they've been able to win, but now they're starting to really stretch out their margins. And this being the biggest county in the state and the bluest county in the state, that says something about how this like urban center of the state is starting to shift more and more and more away from the dominant party, which can create a lot of tensions within the state and already has and may create more. But that's where Democrats have to win first and have to win decisively first if they're going to have a chance to really try to like claw more power back from Republicans statewide.
Salt Lake County is split between all four congressional districts, so its voting power is somewhat diluted in this state, especially when it comes to federal seats. At what point does a growing, stronger Democratic county start to tip those other seats?
Yeah, it can. And this has been the reality of Utah politics now for a few decades, where at the start of each decade, the Republican-led legislature or commission or whatever it is at the time will draw districts that maximally advantage Republican candidates. But then you see constant demographic shifts, people moved into the state, things change, whereas by the end of each decade, you tend to have at least one of those districts become more competitive again. At some point, you get to a point where you cannot just crack the county into four pieces and comfortably win all four. If this shift towards the Democratic Party, if this growth of the county continues, there's a point where it's simply not possible. That doesn't mean there aren't other kinds of gerrymanders or district drawing lines that could be done that would be beneficial to Republicans, but there's a point where that strategy just is not tenable anymore to completely shut out Democratic voters in these congressional races. But you're not there yet. And Democrats would also have to run like really, really appealing candidates in one or more of these districts to maximize the vote they can get there. But it should be a trend that if you're a Republican politician in the state, you should be paying attention to, because at some point, like, the scales tip and you have to adopt a different strategy.
Let's talk about the candidates in Salt Lake County, especially for Salt Lake County Council. We still don't know about this race. What do you read from it being so close?
The race being that close for county council suggests that the Democrats aren't really fully taking advantage of Trump's unpopularity in the county, that their hopes for winning back the county council in 2026 maybe aren't as robust as maybe they could have been or maybe they hoped, because they're trying to win a countywide at-large seat now, and they're going to need to do it again against a pretty strong incumbent in 2 years, and they have to win that race too in order to finally take back control of the county council. And so what you'd want to see as a Democrat is a really strong performance this year, which gives you hope that 2 years from now you're going to be able to do even better.
Moving on to the Senate race. This U.S. Senate race was called essentially with no votes reporting. It was immediate, and Caroline Gleick conceded essentially immediately with a statement. The first press release I got was from an environmental conservation organization praising John Curtis for his stance on climate change. What could John Curtis do for climate change in Utah? And could it change, or will it change, how climate change is talked about here in the state's politics?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a really big deal that John Curtis won, and won so convincingly in the state, being the statewide Republican who got the largest share of the votes, running as a candidate who's very open as a Republican who supports trying to do something on policy to mitigate the effects of climate change. That's a big signal about where climate politics are in the West, where this is not a policy that necessarily just falls along partisan lines, where if you're a Republican, you can't acknowledge climate change, or you can't do anything. It also means that our state is poised to be a leader on this, because John Curtis has already been something of an important voice in Washington on the Republican side on climate change policy. Now in the Senate, he's going to have such a much bigger platform. He's going to find that also he's going to have Republican colleagues in the Senate who are probably more open to getting creative and doing things on climate change, because senators tend to be more moderate, tend to be more open to getting creative on policy than House members who tend to represent these very one-sided districts. And so it means that our state's going to be a leader, and it really reflects the reality that climate change is enough of a concern, especially for people in the West, including for Utahns, that this is the type of representation that people from this state want in the Senate on this really important issue.
In the U.S. Senate, we will now have Mike Lee on one hand and John Curtis on the other. How do you see that dynamic playing out?
Well, it's quite a contrast in styles. John Curtis and Mike Lee will have approached their jobs in Washington in very different ways. I expect that will continue in the Senate. This isn't terribly unusual. States often elect, even if they elect two senators from the same party, they tend to be very different people who approach the job very differently. But in some ways, it's also not new. We just had Mitt Romney and Mike Lee, who are also quite different, very different types of Republicans who approach the job very differently. It seems like this is a continuation of that, where depending on what kind of Republican voter you are in Utah or what kind of voter you are in Utah in general, you have somebody that you can look to that you like and support and want to get behind. But there definitely are a case of contrasts.
That was State Street executive producer Caroline Ballard and University of Utah political science professor Jim Curry.
Even though we have a pretty clear idea of where some of the most consequential races are going, we still aren't at the finish line for this election in Utah.
You are right. Everything is unofficial until the statewide canvass and certification of results. That's happening on November 25th.
And before then, each county will also perform an audit of their results. Tell us a little bit about how that works, Sean.
So each county is required to perform an audit of their ballot counting process. That's supervised by the Lieutenant Governor's office. LG Deidre Henderson told me how that's going to go down.
About 15 minutes or so before their audit, my office actually gives them a random number of batches to pull. So they pull the batches of ballots out. They don't know in advance, and they audit them to make sure that the way that the ballot appears is the way that the ballot was actually counted. That is a public process, and that happens in every election.
It's also worth mentioning that Utah County had a whole lot of problems on election night. Precincts didn't have enough ballots printed for how many people showed up in person to vote, which created a huge backlog in ballot processing. Printers also ran out of ink. It could be a minute before the county results become clear.
And so, with Election Day over, we wait. We're here for whatever comes next. Watch for more of our reporting on KUER.org and in our twice-daily news podcast, Utah News Now. That does it for this episode and season of State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller.
For a few more post-election thoughts from us, check out our State Street newsletter. You can sign up for that at our website.
And fret not, State Street will be back in your feeds for another season early next year for the 2025 legislative session.
Until then, State Street is not possible without our stellar team. Our digital squad is Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark are responsible for editing and audio production here at State Street.
We have a few special shout-outs this episode. First to America Amplified for their support this season. Also big props to Martha Harris, Elle Crossley, and Macy Lipkin for production help and audio gathering on election night.
And thanks to KSL News Radio, my alma mater, who also provided some tape for us. Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
Catch you next season.
Who also provided some tape for us.
That almost sounded like static, but it was your throat.
Yeah.
Nice bit of phlegm just... Down the gullet.
Down the gullet. That's an awful word.
From KUER.